Hey guys, welcome back to The Landing, the first edition of the 2021-2022 season. I'm here with Yags and Benny to really get stuck in. There's been about between 12 and 15 games for each team. So I think it's a good time to kind of discuss what are the subplots of this season. And I'm keen to get into it. How are you guys going?
Good, thanks, Landing.
All right, well, let's start just quickly. I want to mention and get your thoughts on just the new rules for this season, especially the foul calling rules, like with the pump fake and kind of launching into the defender to draw the foul. Straight off the bat, I'm absolutely loving how they're throwing away the whistle for those. I was generally getting very sick of them. Even when a player on my team got one of those calls, I still kind of was just like, oh, it's just a bit cromulent. So I'm really enjoying that part of the season. And overall, I just reckon it's been a much more physical year. I reckon they're letting a bit more go in the key in regards to backing someone down in the post and whatnot. So I'm really enjoying that. But Benny, what do you think of the new rules this year?
Yeah, I think it just makes the game a bit more appealing to watch. There's nothing more frustrating, whether your team's playing or not, than you know, seeing whether it's Trae Young, James Harden, they, you know, stop on a dime and just let the player come in from behind them, and it's not the fault of the defender. And I think they've cut that out, as well as the flailing legs on threes. And I think these were sort of fouls that were being called that weren't, you know, they didn't have to be there. And I think we've already got enough whistles in the game, and just by eliminating some of these ones that didn't really necessarily need to be called in the first place, I think it's just made the game much easier to watch, and you know, it's making it a lot more enjoyable for myself. I know that.
Yeah, 100%. I just think the foul calling, like with those pump fake and like launching into the defender, they're more like a theoretical foul as opposed to like in the kind of like gist of the game. Yeah. Whereas more just like, and it just made, I think over time, naturally the rules, because they want higher scoring games, they kind of aid the offensive player. I think it's been better for this one to kind of give the defender a bit more of a chance as opposed to just getting called for a bunch of whistles. But yeah, what are your quick thoughts on it, Yags?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's been, like as Benny just said, like in a game where there's so many whistles already, it's nice to cut out sort of, I guess, like the fat from the whistles and just like pointless rules and fouls that, yeah, like as you said, theoretical fouls that aren't like, yeah, by the letter of the law, they're probably fouls, I guess, but they're not really in the spirit of the game. And yeah. I think it's made it a bit more like Olympic hoops, where you've got, it's a bit more
100%.
Like international basketball, which is so much fun to watch. And like, we know how much we enjoy the Olympics. It probably evens it out a bit from like the best players in the league to the worst players.
Yeah.
Which is never a bad thing either. Like, I feel like you've seen a lot of guys this year playing sort of like out of their skin. Like, you know, like someone like Gary Payton, who's just had like a career year all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, a guy like him might not have been able to thrive with the old rules, especially with the way he plays defensively. So, yeah, I think overall it's been a great way for the NBA to start this season, because I think it's evened the competition out a bit and also just stopped a lot of the bullshit that was happening.
Yeah, 100%. I think we'll really test someone like James Harden to see how good he really is. And maybe they actually even brought in this rule after watching the Olympics. Maybe the executives or the rule makers of the NBA generally just thought that it was just better to watch over watching the Olympics. So thought to introduce it. But let's quickly get into some of the teams that are thriving. First up, I'm going to give a great alley-oop to AFL Benny, NBA Benny, but Warriors Benny, more importantly. How about those dubs, Benny? Give me something.
Flying at the moment. Can't complain. I mean, a lot of pundits were coming out and saying that it was a tread water period for the Warriors up until Clay got back and Wiseman as well, what he was potentially going to be able to contribute as well. But I think what this front office has really done by observing last season and what they struggled with around Steph, and they've made some really smart changes in adding Bielitsa and Otto Porter, and then they've gone and added the defense of Gary Payton or developed him further. He's bounced to and from our G League team. But I think these have been really smart moves, and they've just really allowed Steve Kerr to implement his game plan, which he got criticized for last year with just sort of sticking fat with what we ran with in the dynasty period. But I think he sort of was looking big picture, and it's now really coming to the floor this year with continuity in the team, and then obviously the young guys like Jordan Poole that have developed and just added to that system further.
Yeah, I think it's been so exciting, and you'd remember this is kind of reminding me of the 2015 team, just that whole strength in numbers type like motto. But I think one of the more exciting things that I've seen, and especially just based on the superstar that Steph is, obviously he's been unbelievable, but probably the thing that I gravitate towards most about him is just his love for the game and how much fun he has. And I think that has just been seen as just being so contagious for this team. And we've got a good mix of getting Iggy back as well is like a huge move. I think he's been given kind of like just a last little kind of bit of juice to finish his career just because he's excited to be back in the Bay. But I think that's been probably the best part for me is just watching how nuts this whole team's going on the sideline. Like so many smiles, like so many laughs. And I think it's such a good brand of basketball to watch. As you can see with us also leading the assist average in the league. So I think it's been so exciting. Steph's been unbelievable. Gone off for a 50 piece, a 45 piece, a 40 piece. But yeah, I'm very excited, and we still haven't even got Clay back. So it's all looking good for us at the moment, Benny.
Yeah, I was saying before we started recording to Benny that I feel like you're the team to beat at the moment, the Warriors, especially with that addition of Clay, like to Calm and Wiseman potentially. Just like with every other team sort of having a lot of question marks around them, especially in the West. Yeah, like all of a sudden it seems like the Warriors to lose. And like Jordan Poole is averaging 18 points a game, which is 7 points up from his career. Gary Payton shooting 66%. Which, you know, that's not going to last. But if he shoots 50% for the rest of the year, that's great.
Not even Dwight Howard shoots that high.
So, yeah, it's just incredible. Like, sort of, obviously, you've got what you get from Steph. And Steph's longevity is incredible because after such a bad injury a couple of years ago, the fact that he's almost as good as he's ever been right now.
Yeah.
Credit
yeah.
to him. But, yeah, like the rise of Poole and Payton and, even Wiggins has just been really good, I thought. Or like he's just been really consistent. You know, he's had heaps of question marks on him throughout his career, is whether he's like tough enough or alpha enough. But I feel like he slots in perfectly at Golden State because he doesn't have to be the main guy, or even he's probably the fourth option.
Yeah.
Fifth option even, but he's just perfect for that. Does it on both ends. And yeah, I love what I'm seeing from the Warriors. And yeah, it's weird because like used to hate the Warriors team with Durant, but I love this Warriors team. So
yeah, I think it's it's funny how like you lose a superstar like that when it's just like seen as just like a ridiculous super team that kind of makes it more enjoyable to watch. And obviously after a couple of seasons of losing a lot, kind of just get that underdog appreciation again. But yeah, I think that's a really good point, Yags. Is just Wiggins being like the third or fourth or fifth option. Is just such a treat to have. And I think my only concerns at the moment would be when Clay and Wiseman slot in. I've already noticed, do you remember the Celtics in, I think it was 2018, they had too many kind of like medium players. Yeah. And like if you've got 8 or 9 or 10 players, it can kind of be hard to maintain, kind of just keep everyone happy with their role and stuff like that. So I think that's my concern at the moment. But at the moment, like so far, it's been all good. But yeah, we've still got to slot in Clay and Wiseman, which would be interesting.
Do you think you play like is your best lineup a Draymond at the five, like a death lineup with then Steph, Poole, Clay, and Wiggins?
I think it's really matchup dependent, and I think that's one thing that really jumps out at me with the Warriors is. no matter the night that it is, I think that we have an answer to whatever the opposition can bring in terms of what we can go to. If we're struggling to create space, and we can go for a real 3-point shooting type lineup. If we need to create a bit of defense, then we can insert Gary Payton, maybe get Iguodala in there. And you know, Clay, we hope that he's going to be somewhat what he was on the defensive side of the ball. But, you know, I think that most of these players give us a real type of variation in terms of what we can go to in different times based on what the opposition is giving us.
Yeah, and to be fair, we're only an eighth through the season, so we've got a lot of time to kind of figure out the lineups in the crunch time. Next team that I want to discuss is the Wizards. They're currently first in the East. They're very exciting to watch. It's interesting the amount of players that have moved away from the LeBron type system that end up flourishing. Kuzma, you know, I've been pretty hard on Kuzma, but I'm actually somewhat enjoying watching him play. What have you guys thought about the Wizards, and like, do you think they can stay at, like, in that like top region of the East?
I don't think they'll be able to stay it from a playoff point of view, but they could be one of those really good regular season teams. They could be like a third or a fourth seed maybe. I don't think they have the sort of the talent to win like a series against like a Brooklyn or a Milwaukee, or even like I think the Knicks have probably more like top end talent than the Wizards.
Yeah.
Obviously Beal's a freak, but I just like the way like they're playing. Like the chemistry's great, and yeah, as you mentioned, Kuzma, and there's been everyone part of that Westbrook deal is playing like the career best basketball.
Yeah, yeah. I think I looked at Basketball Reference the other day, and Montrezl Harrell was fifth. Yeah,
I was just about to say, and he couldn't even get any minutes in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, all those guys are different players at the moment, and Dinwiddie obviously looks to be a really smart acquisition as well, because it's just a seamless fit alongside Beal there in that backcourt.
Ball ball postman, great.
Yeah, as well. Yeah. And as you said, like, they might not be able to match it with the big dogs, but I remember at season start, like, we were just talking about the Wizards, like, their goal for the season was just, like, let's try and create an environment that can keep Bradley Beal happy such that we can hold on to him.
Yeah,
and anything that comes from there is a bonus, and I think they could be pretty confident that they're going to do that. And you know, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, you know, as you said, they could be like 4, 5, 6, and you know, they'll be hoping maybe to get a favorable first round matchup so that they can maybe win a playoff series.
Yeah, I think they kind of remind me a little bit of the Atlanta Hawks in the LeBron Cleveland days. Just where they'll win a bunch of games because they've got a bunch of players, because they've got like 6 or 7 real NBA players that can give you good minutes, good production. So, yeah, I can see them winning a series or two. You go.
They've got really good, like, guard depth. Like, Dinwiddie, Holiday, Beal, Raul Neto is pretty good. Like, they're just
– yeah.
They're a perfect regular season team because they're bat deep and they've got guys that play tough every night. Like Trez, like, he's always going 110%.
Yeah.
And then obviously Kuzma's just got a point to prove, I think.
Yeah, 100%. And Benny, what have you thought about the Heat this year?
It's hard not to be impressed by them. I think Lowry, what he's just brought, just sort of the intangibles. I think he's actually down in, you know, a lot of categories statistically, but I don't think that's what they were looking for. I mean, they weren't getting a ton of production out of that position anyway. It's just for him. They're looking at the playoffs. They're looking at the intangibles he adds throughout the season. You know, what the standards he drives. And then obviously, you know, you hope that he comes up in big spots down the stretch. But, you know, they've got multiple avenues they can go down. You know, Jimmy can have a night. Bam can have a night. And then obviously a big part of this jump that this team's taken is the jump that Tyler Hero's taken. You know, he's been fantastic, really.
Yeah, I think I've got a few things with the Heat. First of all, they've had a couple of injuries recently. Butler's been out and Morris was out as well, even though I'm very off the Morris brothers, but he actually is definitely a piece and gives those like solid minutes throughout a game. But what I really enjoy about them is that they're a very unselfish team. That's what I've always really admired about Jimmy Butler, is that he's a very sharing type player who will always just kind of give his team whatever they need in the specific game. I think we saw that in the finals as well, as like when they needed him to drop 40 or 35, or he can do that, but also he plays great defense and he also can get his teammates involved as well. And he's not too concerned about dropping 25 a night. So I think that really works well. And I think Kyle Lowry, I was very on that trade when they got him. And I'm really enjoying watching him play, because I feel like he seems really motivated at the moment, because he knows I think they've got him at a good time where, yes, he's a bit older, but he knows that he's in his final like few seasons. So I think he's playing very hard and generally just gives him another avenue to score when Hero and Robinson aren't shooting great.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Lowry signing was brilliant. And I think outside of the Nets and the Bucks, and like the Nets have still so many queries because of the way, like, you know, without Kyrie and Harden potentially not being the same player with these rules, I think the Heat of the team that could really pounce, especially if the Bucks keep this poor start of the season up. I think the Heat, like, they're bat deep. And yeah, they've just got all these like tough guy, like, and Larry's just a perfect addition to a team that was already like filled with toughness and leadership.
Yeah, like, yeah. PJ Tucker as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. And then like, as well,
like watching, I think it was the Lakers game the other day. Bam just went nuts in the third quarter.
Yeah.
And when they run the offense through Bam, it's pretty amazing to watch. Like, he's just this, he's like a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, he's an absolute specimen.
So yeah, I think Benny, you mentioned before, like who would take the last shot for them? They've probably got three or four guys that could come up clutch for them in a playoff series. Cause like, you know, Lowry, after what he did that Toronto Golden State finals, was just so good. And then obviously Hero and Butler, but then also, you know, Duncan Robinson could hit a game winning three if you needed to, and Bam, you could run like a, you know, pick and roll with Bam. So
yeah, they've definitely got a lot of options.
I like them a lot.
Yeah. And going to back to Benny's question, that we were talking about before recording this, but I think, yes, it could be an issue that they might not be able to figure out who gets the final shot. But I also think that, as Yates just mentioned, each kind of big player kind of gives a different avenue to score. So like, you've got obviously Lowry, who's more of like the tough player, but again, he'll always make the right play. Jimmy Butler's definitely always going to be the go-to. I think he's the clear go-to. If you need a lob or like something inside, you've got Bam. And then obviously you got Hero and Robinson to shoot like a three. So I think, although, yes, they like, it can be an issue if you've got too many kind of like really good players that can get that final shot, that game tying shot or that buzzer beat or whatever. I still think they're very different in how like their offensive game. So like somewhat can work well just based on the situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they've got the option to one, like just on the specific night, if they've got someone riding hot, then just ride the hot hand, cause they're all capable. But then, you know, you might be playing someone like the Nets who don't really have a natural defender for, say, Bam, and it might just seem a logical play if you can get something to him down in the low post and then work off that. Then you've also got that avenue as well.
Yeah, 100%. All right, Philly. I have, obviously, there's the whole Ben Simmons saga. Just firstly, do you guys think Ben Simmons will play this year? Any team?
He won't play for the Sixers. I'm pretty confident of that. I think whether he plays or not is dependent on if Daryl Morey trades him or not, pretty much.
Yeah, I
agree. Like, yeah, he's definitely not playing for Philly. And but yeah, this whole situation, the fact that they're playing so well right now is not a good look for him.
Before we get into the Sixers, I may as well touch on it now because I wanted to bring it up. Do you think their start to the season sort of has puts Daryl Morey in a position where it's kind of like, okay, like my team's playing this well already without Simmons. Yes, you don't want to take less on the dollar in terms of trading Simmons, but you sort of think to yourself, like, if I can get back like 80% of what I wanted, although we all know how high he asked for initially, but like, you know, if I could get some kind of natural fit around what we've got going right now, is it actually more beneficial to me to pull the trigger on a trade now than say like wait till the off season or something like that? Because like he's got to be looking at this thinking like, we've got another shot here.
Yeah. Yags?
Yeah, I think, yeah, if they could get a piece, like I'm just trying to think like what teams are going to be interested in Simmons, right? Like sort of at the midpoint of the year, like around the trade deadline. It's going to be probably a team that can't make playoffs, right?
Which is even less now because you got the play-in. So
yeah,
more teams are still thinking they're a chance to play in that at the deadline than previous. So it sometimes can reduce the market in terms of who's selling.
Yeah, but I just also just think that it's a similar situation to Kyrie, especially just based on it. Like yes, they can bring in a lot of fans and whatnot. Because like wherever Ben Simmons goes, he's still one of the best defensive players in the league. Yes, he had an awful playoffs, but I still think there's definitely something there in regards to just being as your starting point guard. But same with Kyrie, is that why would you kind of take that contract on if you don't even know if the guy's going to play? Because Ben Simmons has also had a bunch of mental health issues, which like, obviously I hope he's all good, but like that just is like a risk that a team might not be willing to take just because you might not get that many games out of him. Ben Simmons has already shown cases where he throws his toys out of the pram when he's unhappy. Like that's not exactly a great look for anyone to take on. And like Benny, as I'm sure you have thought as well, like, geez, I'm happy the Warriors didn't go after him.
Yeah. I have thought that. No, well, I suppose the teams that are doing are going to be potentially in the space of trading for him are going to be ones that are sort of somewhat already in dire straits anyway. So you're looking at Simmons with glass half full, you're looking at the potential, you're looking at the age. You're sort of saying like, it can't get much worse than what we're in right now. So maybe you're trying to pull the trigger on something. I think maybe there's, you know, I like Sacramento as a team.
Yeah, I was about to say.
I think they're quite fun, but I think maybe there's something there. Like, I don't think De'Aaron Fox has been that good this year. Maybe, you know, he could be quite fun with Embiid.
Yeah, but I also think, think back about the James Harden trade when he wanted to leave. He was a chance to go to Philly. And I'm pretty sure Morey said no. Mm. Looking back on that.
It would have been Harden for Simmons, right?
No, yeah, wasn't. I thought Harden was steadfast on the fact that he wanted to go to the Nets.
Yeah, but I also feel like Morey like wanted more and just kind of maybe wanted to stay away from Harden based off his experience in Houston. But either way, I think that Harden and Embiid would have worked really nicely.
Yeah,
that would.
The only other thing I think of is Portland have started really badly. If they decide to blow it up, but like, there's no way that they're giving up Dame for Simmons. So like,
yeah, it had to be
like
something.
The only other option would be a team that's like a Portland who have sort of been there around for 10 years and they're not going to go any further with this.
Yeah, they need to try something different. But the one thing I thought about with that is like Seth Curry at the moment is playing as well as CJ McCollum is like, yeah. And if he's not, he's playing slightly less. But you know, he knows the system, fits well. He's like that off ball guard. You know, if it's not Dame, that's probably CJ in that deal, yeah. And then you kind of got two of the same players. So
you'd only do it if you're getting Dame, sure. But you'd have to give up a lot. Like you'd have to give Simmons and a few picks and maybe Thibault and.
I guess the only positive, like for Portland, is if one looking at Simmons is like his potential, but also just like it's a downgrade in like 6 or 7 years of age. So, like, they just kind of get that window to be a bit more open with, like, having a starting point guard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I suppose – and the other thing with Dame is, like, you know, how long does this rut – I will get to Dame later, but
– Yeah.
You know, the longer the rut continues, does that make people in certain other Portland's camp or Dame's camp antsy about the situation?
Yeah, definitely. But back to Philly. So, Benny, what have you thought about the role players stepping up and just kind of mixing with Embiid? Because Embiid's been out for a couple of games and they still won a few, and I'm kind of enjoying, they seem to have like a pretty good culture at the moment.
Well, excuse me. I thought that with Philly, if you sort of asked me where they'd be after 20 games this season, I thought, you know, it wouldn't be a surprise if they were one of the teams sort of sitting at 500, maybe even a little bit below 500 early on in the season before they figured things out and maybe got used to life without Simmons. It really was a shambles before the season. Like, Doc Rivers didn't seem to be coping with it too well in his press conferences. And but in terms of their on-court performance, they just churn out wins. They're a really good regular season team. And I don't actually think Embiid's been that good. You know, he's down in most categories, but he's actually up in assists. And I think that really speaks to the players around him performing better. Seth Curry's having his best year yet. Obviously, his minutes are up, but he's up in...
Maxey's been unbelievable.
Yeah, Maxey as well. Seth's been up in effective field goal percentage, even while shooting more field goal attempts. So, and he's shooting like 47% from three or something like that. So, I just think they're finding a way to win right now. And I think Doc Rivers, although he'll be really annoyed by what's going off the court, I think he's doing a good job with what he's got on the court at the moment, because they've also been troubled with injury and COVID as well, has gone through Philly as well.
Yeah. What do you think, Gags?
Yeah, there was one game the other day where they literally had their starting lineup was unrecognizable because so many players had COVID and injured. But yeah, I think Maxey is shooting 52% from the floor and 41% from three, which is like a both massive increase from last year while playing way more minutes because he's starting. So that shows like he's just made a massive leap in the offseason. But yeah, I like them a lot. I don't think that, you know, they're probably not going that far in the playoffs unless Embiid can sort of get to that monstrous Shaq-esque numbers where he's dropping like 35 and 10 in the playoffs, which he's probably capable of doing. But yeah, I really like what they're doing at the moment. And if they can somehow make a move with Simmons and get someone in, I think they could be a massive contender. But yeah, I'd say for them right now, they're probably like a first or second round exit. But that's still a pretty good year considering how much stuff that they've had to do.
Yeah, given their second best players out.
Yeah,
definitely. Which is a perfect segue to PG and the Clippers with Kawhi being out. How have you guys thought of PG this year? And generally just the Clippers in general, because I think after last year's playoff performance, they really impressed a lot of people, especially PG. But I've really enjoyed watching them. And I think PG is my MVP Smokey at the moment, even though it's Steph 100%. But like, if you had to bet on second place, you'd probably go PG at this point. Yeah, true. What have you guys thought of the Clippers?
Yeah, I think they're really good to watch. I agree. The their ball movement's really, like, it's very Warriors-esque in a way. Bledsoe's past sort of week has been really good. He started the season really badly, but he's sort of picked up quite a bit. And then even like Hartenstein, who is just like this random like center, he's got this elite dunk, and he's like,
he won them the game the other night.
Yeah. But yeah, PG has been incredible. And I think like last year, if they had Kawhi, they would have won the chip.
I 100% agree.
And I just think, yeah, PG is, this is his best, so far his best season. He continues to get better, and he sort of is an alpha now. Like, there's not, you can't deny that. Obviously, they'd be better with Kawhi and the team, but he's the leader of this team now, and he's stepping up like when they need him to be that. And they're going to be a contender even if Kawhi doesn't come back.
Yeah, like, I think it's
they're top four in the West, I reckon.
Yeah,
and
I think.
And if things go their way, they could make the finals even without Kawhi, as long as, you know, they need a few breaks, like Warriors, Clay not being that good. But if they do get the breaks, like last year, there was, you know, Phoenix got lucky to make the finals.
Yeah.
If things go their way, they could be in a similar position.
100%. I also think for PJ, I've read that Kawhi's confirmed out for the year. They're not even going to risk getting him back for playoffs. But I think that mentally for PJ would be huge for his confidence, just to kind of be like, look, I can't wait for Kawhi to come back. This is my team. I need to take over. I think we're seeing that in his general confidence and the way he's conducting himself. And after 2 years ago with that very poor playoff performance, it's been awesome to see, first of all, coming back last year in the playoffs and getting rid of that nickname, but also continuing on the year after, which has just been very impressive, and especially coming from an injury that he had, which is one of like those really bad leg injuries that we've seen, like people like Gordon Haywood and Sean Livingston, who's obviously not as the caliber of those guys, but like it takes a while to get back.
Yeah, I think the other thing with the Clippers is like this is a real feather in the hat for Ty Lue. I think like what he's doing with them, you know, he makes changes on the fly, you know, and sort of like what I was touching on with Steve Kerr before in terms of like lineup versatility. I know they don't have Kawhi at the moment, but he's happy to identify on the night like what's going right and wrong, and he can make the changes necessary. And like I'd have pretty good confidence in him in like a 7-game series. I think like just like the question is sort of like with PG, like as you said, like he's in career best form, but he's sort of like one of those in-between players, I feel sometimes, where like he's definitely like good enough to be a one, but at the same time, like he couldn't be the one, I don't think, on a championship team. Mm.
Yeah, I agree. But he's probably, at the moment, he's like closer to being like the one on a championship team than he's ever been.
Yeah.
But comes, yeah, the other thing I want to say is just about Ty Lue is like he's almost a top three coach in the league.
Yeah, like he's definitely done well. Like
him and Kerr and Spoelstra. Who else at the top of my head? Like, it'd be those three.
I would honestly like as well, like
Quinn Snyder, but like the Jazz would need to do something in the playoffs.
I think Quinn Snyder is similar to Doc Rivers in regards to just being like, I think Doc Rivers has done a great job this season, as we've just talked about Philly, but I think he's similar to Snyder in regards to just being able to get wins despite injuries and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one thing for Ty Lue is like, this has been great for him, just like in the sense that, you know, some people thought he was kind of just a puppet in that Cavs side that, I mean, the whole thing with a LeBron team is that like LeBron is the coach as well as the player.
Yeah.
But I think this has sort of been great to show that, you know, maybe he played a bigger role in that team than he's given credit for. And he's now been given the opportunity to show that. And, you know, I think we're seeing that he's actually a really good coach.
Absolutely.
So we'll move on to the next team. So Knicks, I'm going to throw you an alley-oop as well, Yags. Yeah. Give me your first initial thoughts on the first 11 or 12 games based on last year. I want you to keep this in mind that last year everyone mentioned that they kind of like overachieved based in the regular season. Give me your kind of take on, have they improved from that season last year? And I've got another question after you answer that.
Yeah, so it's sort of interesting. Like obviously the sample size is so small. So, but I think it's been, in some ways, like we've played some of the best basketball I've seen a Knicks side play since I've been following basketball, so about 12 years or so. like as good as that Melo 2013 team with Steve Novak and Jason Kidd. But at the same time, like we've still got so many inconsistencies, and the sort of the ebbs and flows and the peaks and troughs have been far too dramatic. Yeah, the troughs. The troughs have been really bad. Like Charlotte the other night, we're up 20 at like quarter time and then end up losing by 10. So if Tibbs can just eradicate those sort of inconsistencies, then I think our best basketball has been really good. Like we belted the Bucks in Milwaukee, albeit an injury ridden Bucks. But I think, yeah, our best has been really good. And Randall was playing just as well as last year. Yep. RJ's probably taken another leap. Okay, I think I did career high the other day, 35. But yeah, there's still a lot to do, and in a very good East, we need one more superstar. Well, yep. If Randall's not a superstar, but we need another star. But this team should be good enough to make another good playoff run, I think.
Yeah, perfect that you mentioned that. If I've got a question from Richo. Do you think with this current crop, you're a star free agent signing away from challenging? And who would that, off the top of your head, who would you reckon? And it doesn't have to be available, but what's the type of player that you'd look for?
Probably a guard who can run the pick and roll with Randall, I guess.
Yep.
So like a Dame would be perfect.
Oh, that would be beautiful. I would love that. Because I think
that would be my ultimate, you know, wet dream or something.
Yeah, that's it.
Dame combined in the net.
But
turn it off.
But yeah, someone like Dame who can, because we need, I think Randall is so good, but like he's not going to win you the game in the last minute. And I think that Atlanta series last year proved that. He's still got a lot to learn. And when it comes to, when teams have time to prepare for him, like he really struggled in that Atlanta series when they had 2 weeks to prepare for him. But yeah, like someone like Dame who can run the pick and roll, score anywhere. Cause we like D Rose is probably our go-to scorer and he's like a savvy veteran.
Jeez, like, he's good.
He's our instant offense. And you need someone more than that. Yeah. Yeah. Someone like, obviously, you know, like a Harden would be perfect on this team. Just someone who can initiate, offense through passing and scoring.
Yeah. But yeah, I've watched a lot of Knicks games this year. Just generally, I'm pretty fascinated with New York basketball. And I've definitely noticed, one, Randall shoots too many threes.
Yep.
Very frustrating. I think he's just not skilled enough offensively with jump shooting to warrant shooting that many. I think he shoots a lot of panicked three-pointers where it's like, oh, no, we haven't scored in a few possessions. Let's try and get it all back at once. So I think that's going to be a dangerous game. But, yeah, I think RJ has been really good. But I think, yeah, overall you're really looking for that clear closer. You've got a kind of a lot of, like, kind of B-plus options, but you don't really have an A. But, yeah, I definitely reckon there's a lot to work with that roster. And I think one thing is Tibbs is, like, brought a great culture. I think that's it's been impressive to watch that continue from last year.
I'd go as far as saying that, like, Julius Randle is an A player. Like, if you're working all the way up to A+, like, he's not all the way up there. It depends how many people you give A+. But I just think he's, like, that's the weakness in his game. Like, across the space of a 48-minute game, he's got the ability to have you in a winning position. Like, he can, between points, boards, assists, bringing others into the game. He's gotten much better at scoring the basketball, but I just think, like, that's the part of his game that is the weakness. Everyone has one, and his is that, like, if it's 2 minutes to go and it's about, like, we get a basket, you get a basket, like, I just think that's the part of his game that he needs someone to go along with that. And as you said, like, I think that's the player you'd look for. But in terms of, like, as a knock on him, like, you know, it's not what you want your best player to have, but I still think on a whole, like, I think, you know, he's been outstanding the last year and a half almost now.
Yeah, 100%. But also, like, that's a big knock on Westbrook is those closing minutes, which, as you know, in basketball, are huge. Like, they're massive. Like, the last 4 or 5 minutes is Matt. And it's definitely, if that's, I'm not saying Randall, like, his decision making is better than Westbrook. And his attack on the basket's better. And he's vital to the Knicks. Don't get me wrong. But there also is an element of, yeah, as you said, you need your best player to be able to be relied on in those final minutes. And, like, I reckon that does bump you down to a B+ and not an A.
Yeah, that's fair.
And he just, like, he doesn't have, like, a go-to, I guess, shot. Like, he can't create his own shot easily when the defense knows it needs to clamp him down. Like, you know, like Kawhi always go to will be like sort of bang it down the mid range, and you know, like Kobe, like yeah, they have a go to shot. The really like the A plus players that they can just get to that spot every time, and like LeBron, like he'll just he can get in the paint whenever he wants.
Yeah.
But yeah, Randall just needs to work on that.
How old is Randall? 27?
26,
27?
2012 draft.
Yeah, so he's still definitely got a bit of development to go. And you can and kind of refine like, those skills.
He's only been like the guy for 18 months now.
Yeah, and he's also like he's jumped around a few teams, so it can be hard to kind of develop in a game where you don't really know your clear role because you're in a new team every year. So yeah, I'm not counting him out. I'm just more just saying that that's a knock on him.
And one last thing just on that. I think he's a far better shooter than say like Westbrook. And I think that maybe one thing that they could try and potentially do to make life a bit easier on him, given that he doesn't have that ability to create that shot in those final 2 minute type moments is, you know, can you get him in positions where he's kind of already in that scoring position? Once he gets the ball, is that something Tibbs can do to take a bit of the pressure off his shoulders? Because I think as a shooter, long as you know he's not just jacking up disgusting threes, I still think he's a capable shooter and scorer. It's just like creating that shot for him in those moments.
Yeah, agreed.
Great. All right, so let's go across the bridge and go to the Nets. They started off a bit shaky, and then they've kind of they've won a few on the trot now, and they're playing a bit better. I think Harden's starting to show a bit more fitness because he came into the season just a bit overweight, a bit porky. But then also I've noticed Harden, which is what I kind of mentioned at the start of the pod. I think he's adjusting to the foul calls. But first of all, I will also say I reckon he got stiffed a bit. I think they definitely targeted Harden a bit more than a lot of other players just based on his history. With trying to draw fouls, but I think there was a lot of times where literally he was just getting absolutely bodied or like his arms fully tangled and unfortunately didn't get the call. But I think they're starting to show a bit of form, and Kevin Durant has been unbelievable. And for a Warriors fan, one, I will always have a soft spot for KD, but also coming off an Achilles, looking on how Clay will return, it's just been huge. Just like he's easily the best player to ever return from an Achilles injury. He's literally playing the best he's ever has in his whole life. So I think he's been sensational. I think he's obviously second favorite for the MVP. But what have you been your thoughts on the Nets been, Benny?
Well, I think as you said, like they were slow to get it together. I always thought that like Harden was sort of going to figure it out. He needed to realize what he was and what was and wasn't going to get. And as that, I just thought that would come with time through the season. And with KD being in the form that he was in, like he was sort of enabled the time to be able to find that. And he's played a bit better over the last few games. So they'll start to improve. And I think at the moment, although they're not the top of the East, I'd say like they're the best looking of the big dogs at the moment in the East. But I suppose if there's one area of concern for them, I think is that, you know, defensively, I think that they can still be exposed a bit. It just looks like they're starting to get even less production out of these other like the older vets and even guys like Joe Harris, who previously they were really, you know, they were able to rely on. He looks to have dropped off a little bit as well. So
yeah, he was very hot the other day though. He was like 6 of 6 from three in the first half. But yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it was good to see him get back to a bit of normality. But you know, if this pattern continues, like as good as KD is playing, like it's gonna ultimately could potentially wear him down across the space of the season if he's got to continue to carry them. But I think their hope would be that alternating between him and Harden, if Harden can find form, then that'll just sort of be enough.
Yeah. Yags?
Yeah, I mean, KD's shooting 59% from the field. Oh. And his effective field goal percentage is 64%. Which takes into account like threes are more valuable than twos. But yeah, he's like this is his best year so far.
He's
only played 14 games, but like it's absurd, especially Landy, as you mentioned, he's coming off like the worst possible injury in sports. I think they're probably, because they're 10-4, they started quite, they're like 3-4. So they've really turned it around, and Harden's starting to get in some form. So yeah, I think purely on a talent point of view, and like I think in a way, Kyrie being not there is maybe a good thing, because then you don't have to worry about sharing the ball between three egos.
Yeah.
Nave just got the two, and they're the two, and Kyrie is the worst of those three as well. Like Durant and Harden are better players than Kyrie. So I think, and you know, you could argue Durant's the best, him and Steph are probably the best, and Giannis are the best three players in the league right now. And they've probably got a gap on, well, above me, Jokic, sorry.
Yeah.
But probably those four and then a gap to the, like, the rest of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just think with that, they're an Eastern Finals contender, obviously, like they were last year. It'll just be interesting to see if they can get the most out of those. Like, Aldridge is actually playing quite well.
He is. I was about to say that, yeah.
But can you get enough out of, like, Aldridge and Millsap, and can Griffin, because Griffin's playing really well as sort of this role player, playing at the five for them. And, like, you know, Bruce Brown, can they get enough out of those guys in the playoffs? That'll be interesting.
Yeah, 100%. I think, yeah, obviously, when you're very top-heavy like they are, it can be a bit of a dangerous game in regards to injuries as well. Like, but to be honest, in basketball, if one of your two best players get injured, it's pretty hard to kind of not get it together, people. which is different to like NFL and AFL. But I think, yeah, that was their downfall last year.
Yeah.
And I think that was also the Lakers' downfall last year. So I think if they can stay healthy, they've got two players in the top eight, top 10 of the NBA. So I think they'll be all right if they can get there. And they'll always be a shot because, yeah, they're two of the most dangerous offensive players that we've had in the last 20 years, like in the history of basketball, dead set. So,
yeah, ever. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think they'll be okay. And also with their slow start, I think that we can also put that towards like when those older vet players, which like KD and Harden are both over 30, it can generally be a bit harder to motivate yourself at the start of the year compared to a lot of younger teams. So I wouldn't be too worried about that.
Yeah, and they pace themselves somewhat. They know what the long game's like, and you know, you got all these eager young bucks that want to try and prove themselves on various teams and make a statement, along with these other teams that are keen to right their wrongs from, like, you know, teams like the Wizards and the Cavs and stuff like that, who are keen to get out the blocks fast, but they sort of know that for them it's just all about the long game. So,
and you know, the KD and Harden would have spent a bit more extra time in Cabo compared to a lot of other players. All right, let's move on to, we've actually taken a while to get to them, but one of the more watchable teams in the league, the Bulls. First off, it's been awesome to see Chicago pumping again. They've had a pretty awful decade. Other than those, the best would definitely be the Rose years, but the Bears have also been trash. So they've had a pretty tough decade, same as the Knicks. But I reckon, first of all, they're very exciting to watch. LaVine, and I'm loving DeRozan at the Bulls. I think he's someone that has been an awesome player for the last, how long has he been in the league? 13 years, something like that.
Yeah, 2008, I think.
Yeah, but he, I've always loved his game. I think he's an absolute baller. He's one of those guys that you can see him just torching in street ball. He's that sort of guy, like from Compton, just a really cool kind of like vibe about him. He's rocking the cornrows beautifully. And I think the pickups of Lonzo, DeRozan, and Ball. Oh, no, sorry, not Lonzo and Ball. and Caruso, sorry. There we are. I think they're really sitting nicely. They'll win a bunch of regular season games just because they've just got more firepower than most teams. And I think thinking about their kind of playoff run, I can see, I think the pressure's on LaVine mainly to see if he can kind of take that next step in regards to the clutch play. But I think DeRozan's a proven closer, although he's got demons with LeBron, but like everyone had demons with LeBron. So I just don't think that's a big knock on you. But I, yeah, overall think that they're sitting really nicely. And I honestly think they could win I reckon they could honestly make the Eastern Conference Finals.
Wow.
Yeah.
You think they're the real deal?
Yep.
I wouldn't go that far. But I'm bullish on them as well. Excuse the pun.
Turn it off.
I really like what their front office did, and it kind of somewhat seems logical, but you can kind of see the moves ahead of time. Like they identified DeRozan to bring in and take the pressure off LaVine because he was sort of the only natural scorer in the team. And then you sort of look at that and you go like, what are the issues that might arise here? And you go, okay, defense. And then they brought in Lonzo.
Vucevic.
They brought him in mid-season last year, before the deadline. But, and then they sort of identified that potentially like LaVine and DeRozan might bring up some like defensive issues. So they brought in Lonzo and then Caruso. I think the Lakers made a massive mistake letting go of him. And we're sort of seeing that. But I just think it's a really nice mix. It's unfortunate that Patrick Williams got injured because I think that he sort of gave them a little bit of extra scope. Like if he continued to develop, and he's showed potential to be like an elite defender. But I think that, I wouldn't have them far off like the Eastern Conference Final, like maybe if things fell right, sort of like an Atlanta Hawks situation. But I think that they'll win a playoff series.
Yeah. Quickly,
you go.
Okay, just another thing, just talking about their acquisitions and like their roster. I think, although they're not to the level of the Heat, but I think having Vucevic, LaVine, DeRozan, and Ball, I think they kind of show also a lot of different avenues to score as well. Vucevic, he's been injured the last few games, but he's like that more inside player. But also he's a bit like kind of reminds me a bit of Pau Gasol, his offensive game, similar to that. But I think they've got that's a big thing that I look for in a good playoff team is just having different avenues to score and being able to rely on different players based on what the situation is in front of them.
Yeah, I agree, and I think Lonzo has been such a good pickup for them because he sort of takes, because he's not a scorer, but he's in the perfect position to be that distributor to two guys who love shooting, who are DeRozan and LaVine.
Yeah.
And then obviously Vucevic down low is, he's been such a good player for...
Vucevic is a good three shooter as well. Like he can kick out to the three-point line as well.
DeRozan's career shooting from three is 28%. This year, 37%.
Wow. Embracing it. It doesn't take many either, so that's definitely...
Yeah, that's true. But like it just shows that he's improving. He's shooting 50% from the floor, which is an increase on his career average.
Yep.
Which is, pretty incredible for guys like 33.
He's 33. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was I'm pretty sure he's the same draft as Steph, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, was he? Yeah, pick six or something.
Yeah.
No,
that was definitely one of the Minnesota picks, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, that was like Johnny Flynn or
Rogan. Johnny Rudy Flynn.
Yeah. What's that guy up to?
But yeah, I think I don't like they could make like as Benny said, if they. They get a bit of luck and the Nets and the Bucks, if the Bucks injuries keep failing them, they could make the conference finals, but I probably have them winning one playoff series. If it was them versus the Knicks in a playoff series, I probably think the Bulls just have a bit more firepower.
Yeah. I'm quite on them. I just think they've just got a lot of options. They're only going to get better in regards to playing with each other because it's still literally like 13, 14 games in and they're already like showing quite a bit. So I think they're only going to get better. I think Lonzo, when he's just not pressured to score much, he's just such a like an enjoyable player to watch. Obviously, his shooting's gotten a lot better, but he's just a bit more like that Draymond, just always looking to kind of facilitate. And I think that's really important for a playoff team as well.
Yeah, I think the other thing that you just touched on then, which is a really good point, is like this team was like a bunch of jigsaw pieces kind of that were put together at the start of the season. Like I know Vucevic was middle of last year, but it was sort of only really Levine and Patrick Williams, and then they've gotten Caruso and Ball and DeRozan. And sometimes with these kind of teams, like it takes them like 25, 30 games.
It takes time. But like
the fact that they've come out and hit their stride pretty quickly, I think that might bode well for them.
Yeah, 100%. I'm bare on them. But like, what are they in the rankings now? Are they like second or third in the East?
Yeah, third or fourth, I think.
Where would you reckon they would sit at the end of the year? Holding?
See them finishing like third or fourth potentially.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, we'll say. Yeah. Top four. Yeah. And next team, which is the last team, we'll talk about the Lakers as well, but the Cavs. Benny, I know you've enjoyed watching them. Give me something.
I just think they're a really fun team to watch, and they've sort of gone away from what the NBA's gone towards at the moment. Like everyone's sort of going towards like, oh, we need to get threes up. We need to find players that are able to get out to the line and spread the floor. And they stumbled their way into Jared Allen and then they found themselves sort of like looking at Evan Mobley, who looks to be like a home run pick at the moment. And they've just kind of tapped into the fact that that's their strength.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had two point guards that sort of like play off each other. And it was sort of originally viewed that like it could be a weakness. They're sort of similar players. And, you know, they potentially lack in defense, but they sort of use their height to counter that. They try and run teams off the 3-point line and run them into their help defense around the rim. And it's just like a lot of fun to watch them play. It's yeah, something different. It's fresh. And I've just enjoyed, you know, they're young, obviously, which is always a contributing factor to see these kind of teams fly around and be competitive early on. So like, I'm not sure if they'll hang around. They could do. Like, I think they feel play-in type to me when things settle down.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just really enjoyed seeing like some of these younger players develop into what they are now and what they will continue to develop into.
Yeah. Well, I just quickly want to say, I reckon that this Cavs team remind me a lot of the Knicks team a couple of years ago, or like even last year, just with like a interesting balance between veterans and younger players. I think Rubio has been sensational coming off the Olympics. He's just been booming. I think it's been also really nice to see Kevin Love playing some minutes and playing some important minutes as well. I think he'd just be a really good personality to have around the locker room, as well as like Markkanen, just kind of, a lot of these players that have come from other teams, whether it's their second or third team, they're kind of like, all right, well, if I'm going to have a solid NBA career, I'm going to have to do it eventually. And whether that's extra motivation for them. So I think why I say the Knicks is it just like a kind of a random mix of players, like, you know, like D Rose, Randall, and like, it's just like this, a team that you wouldn't really kind of picture being together, but then here we are, you know what I mean? What are your thoughts, Yokes?
Yeah. Like, Mobley's a freak, and he reminds me of a young like Bam, with potentially a higher ceiling because he's
also got a bit of like Tim Duncan, I feel, in him.
That's a compliment.
I know it's a stretch.
No, like I'm with you.
Mold of player.
Don't pull back on it now, Benny. I'm on it.
It's the next big fundamental.
He's better than Tim Duncan already.
Yeah, like he's a jet. And then Rubio, as you said, like Rubio against the Knicks the other day, he had like 38 or something. He absolutely torched us from three. It was incredible.
Yeah,
it was like it was Steph Curry.
I love him.
And then like Garland, I think, is like playing better this year.
Yeah.
Sexton's been injured for a couple of games, but that's probably almost a blessing for them because I feel like Sexton's kind of that shoot first point guard who's not that effective.
Yeah.
So that's allowed. And like Dean Wade starts with them and he plays like 35 minutes, but he's just like really unselfish and plays like a team role.
Teddy Osman and
yeah.
Taco Fall can't even get any minutes.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of tall guys.
Yeah.
a lot.
Yeah. I think, yeah, they could be like a 8th seed and, yeah, maybe a playing team. You can, yeah, you kind of see them falling away at the end of the year because they're, you know, like Mobley probably is almost their best player and he's quite young. He's a rookie. So, yeah, but for Cleveland, it's more about what the next 5 years could be, what the next 10 years could be, and could be very exciting.
Yeah, yeah. I'm on them. And just quickly, we've kind of touched on the Bucks in particular, but the Bucks and Hawks, I just want to ask you guys quickly, the Bucks and Hawks are 11th and 13th in the East. And it's obviously a small sample size, but it's still 15 games, not nothing. Do you think those guys make it into the playoffs?
Yes, for the Bucks.
Yep.
I think there could be something to read into the Hawks. I'm not going to say that they won't make playoffs, but I think there's more to be made of their situation than there is with the Bucks. Like the Hawks have still had close to a full bill of health, and they're just playing really poorly. Yeah. I don't know if they sort of bought a ticket to their own show and and got a high opinion of themselves off last year.
Yeah, they've got no feathers in their hat.
but I just think they're just not playing the same way that they were last year. And but in terms of the Bucks situation, like I simply just put it down to like players that have missed time include Holiday, Portis, Middleton, Lopez, DiVincenzo still out. I think Giannis missed a couple of games. Yep. They won a chip. They toured the White House. Like just various stuff that goes on.
It's a hangover.
Like they smacked the Nets game one. I know that's only game one, but like I've seen it. They'll figure their stuff out.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think Bucks are still making the Eastern Finals, barring Giannis getting injured or Middleton not coming back or something. But the Hawks, I don't know. Like they should make the playoffs still.
Yeah. They definitely have the roster.
They're definitely not sort of having – I don't think they're going on the run they did last year. And I think, yeah, like they – like I feel like a lot of their players have just – obviously it's only, 13, 14 games in, but a lot of their players are just not producing the way they were last year.
Yeah.
And a lot of the guys outside of Trey are sort of quite, they're quite inconsistent. Like,
yeah, streaky.
You can't trust them. Yeah, they're very streaky. But yeah, and as Benny said, they don't really have the excuses the Bucks do.
Yeah, well, I just want to quickly say, I read a quote the other day from Trae Young talking about how his team are lacking to find motivation after their performance last year. And I'm just like, mate, buddy, you made the Eastern Conference Finals one time. Like, surely there's enough motivation. You're an NBA player. You're a young NBA
player. Rounds.
Yeah, like, dead set. Like, just that. I did not like that. Didn't like the look of it. I think Trae Young's an absolute baller. He went off today. But I didn't really love that because I think there should be enough motivation just purely from just being a young NBA team.
Especially from the so-called leader of the team.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, it's not a great standard to be driving the fact that you're coming out and you're saying that, like, oh, we've experienced playoffs now, so we sort of know that this doesn't matter. Well, like,
you're not LeBron at 36 years old. Tom Brady's at 44 and he's still sizzling. Like, you'd be very right to find some motivation.
Yeah. That's a ridiculous.
Yeah.
Before you move on, say, like, if you had to take in a 7-game series, I'd give you a couple teams. Would you take the Hawks or the Bulls?
I'm taking the Bulls.
Jack?
I'll take the Hawks because Trey is the best player over those two rosters. But I think, only because of Trey. But I'd probably the way the Bulls, I think, have better chemistry.
The Hawks or the Knicks?
Knicks. This year.
I'm taking the Hawks.
They part us last year.
And one more. The Hawks or the Celtics?
The Hawks.
Okay. Yeah. So those kind of teams are the ones that like are going to be competing with them. And like these other teams, like the Knicks and the Bulls that have come out hot are the reason, like, we sort of are starting to contemplate the Hawks potentially, like, you know, being a play-in team or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. And now let's talk about the Lakers. I know Benny's got a little a nice little segment on it, so I want to give the mic to Benny. But Benny, talk us through how your initial thoughts on the Westbrook fit and what the Lakers could, like, do to kind of help kind of create like a perfect mix and just give the correct minutes and whatnot.
Yeah, so it's just a personal opinion more than anything, but I think it potentially could be what the Lakers season rides on potentially, in the sense that we know that, like, Russ likes to have the ball in his hands, and we also know that LeBron is the same. So the fact that LeBron and Russ are on the same court at the same time is not a natural fit, because once you start putting Russ off the ball, then you naturally, that the flow on effect of that is you put Russ into more shooting scenarios, because he's going to be getting dished to by LeBron.
No. Like,
yeah, that's not what you want. So I was sort of thinking that, you know, could the Lakers season really come down to, is Russ able to somewhat put his ego aside, and is there a conversation that's had, whether it's between like Vogel and Westbrook, or, you know, does LeBron even like do it himself, where it's kind of like, for the betterment of the team, I don't think that like LeBron and Westbrook can be on the court together.
Yeah.
Just from a fit perspective, like, we've sort of seen Monk play a couple of good games. Like, I don't know, that maybe that's not the right one defensively.
Well, Benny, but just quickly, the perfect person that should speak with him is Melo.
Because of their relationship?
Just Melo just being able to kind of like buy into his new role. I think that's the perfect person to talk about, where like Melo like was looking like he was going to be out of the league, couldn't even find a spot. But then he's able to kind of accept that he's not what he was, and come off the bench and lead that second unit. He's been outstanding. Like, he's literally added like a few years onto his career. Like, now he'll just keep ranching. Yeah. So I think that, and obviously Westbrook's personality seems pretty rigid and hard to get to, but I think Melo would be a really good person to talk to. Just to kind of like be like, look, like, buddy, I was going to be out of the league. Trust me. Like, this could be the best thing for you.
And Melo as well. Like, Melo was probably like as good as Russ was at their respective peaks. Like,
yeah,
Melo was a top three guy in the league at one point.
Yeah. So. And to go further into that point, I think that we know what Russ is in terms of like when he is on the ball, and what he can create for others. Like, he's still elite at getting to the rack. And the chaos that sort of forms on the defense by them having to fall in to prevent that, he's able to carry a lesser unit. And we saw that at OKC when once everyone sort of got the hell out of there. But so I think that, you know, you could maybe sort of tap into his ego a bit and let him start the game. But then after a quick like 5 minutes, you get him out the game and you stagger his minutes with LeBron, and he still fits with Davis, but you get him to run that second unit. And I think that would actually be an advantage for them to have a caliber player like Westbrook is and have him running that unit.
Yep. But Ben, quickly talk us through the kind of, did you mention like the minutes in regards to kind of taking him off like when LeBron and like kind of like starting him, and then that thing that you were mentioning earlier?
Yeah. So like, I think you let him start because like there's in NBA players kind of have this thing where like you're a starter or you're not a starter. And once you're not a starter, like you're a lesser player.
Yeah.
So like Westbrook strikes me as a person that like if you full bench him and he's coming off the bench, then like he'll do his nuts. You let him start, but then I think from that point, you know, it's a quick burst at the start and then he's off and you get him a better fit on the court playing alongside LeBron. And then when LeBron comes off, like Westbrook goes on. Westbrook can still play with AD. I think they play with each other quite fine. But then you've got a more reliable ball user. Well, reliable is probably the wrong word when you're referring to Westbrook. But you've got someone who's done that role a lot with your second unit. And then you alternate his minutes with LeBron. And then ultimately, you probably just can't close with him.
Yep. Agreed. Going bigger picture, which is the Lakers as a whole, I think one of the key, obviously they've had LeBron out, which is just huge. Like they're not winning. I reckon they could borderline only win one series if they don't have LeBron. Even despite AD playing pretty well at the moment, and I'll touch on AD in a second. But I think their biggest issue is and which is a lot about their age, but they just don't have many wing defenders. And I think with the current NBA, wing players are so explosive and so dominant throughout the whole league. So I think they're generally struggling with having like Melo, whether it's Melo guarding PJ or Melo guarding Wiggins, you just can't go with him. You just can't go with him. And then like Kent Bazemore, I just don't think he's very good at all. Benny, we've had some frustrations with him over the years. Avery Bradley's old. And they got Horton Tucker back, who can obviously probably their best wing defender, to be honest, except when LeBron turns it on. But I just think that's where they're really going to struggle in the playoffs, because it's going to be the best wing players. If they go up against a team like, say, they face the Bulls in the finals, I just don't think they'll be able to cover them.
So to get a Yags, then Yags, what would you say is your opinion that the Lakers' best closing lineup is?
Oh, that's a good one.
AD, well, whatever the best lineup is, AD has to be at the five.
Yep.
So I think AD at the five, closing. The way Melo is playing, I'd have to have Melo playing one of the forward positions. LeBron, obviously. Geez, you could almost have Russ out.
Oh, I'd probably have Monk and Rondo.
You wouldn't have Rondo with LeBron.
Melo,
I would rather Rondo than AD. Westbrook.
What about like
Horton Tucker?
Oh yeah.
And then
you'd have like Monk or Wayne. Monk. Wayne. Monk. Yeah, Malik.
LeBron, so you have LeBron paying the point, and then you have like Monk and Melo on the wings, and Horton Tucker, and then AD at the five.
Yeah.
I think. But yeah, like at the same time, like, can you leave out a guy who's as good as Russ?
And that's not a grade five.
No.
You saw, remember night one when they played the Warriors? Like, that's virtually like as good a game as you're going to get out of like LeBron and AD.
Yeah.
And they lost the game now. Like, they've got more production out of those other players, like, as we move further into the season. But like, I could see there being like a lot of games where that scenario happens where LeBron and AD and Westbrook at points are going to have to do so much heavy lifting, because the lineup you just outlined there, like, it's not jumping off the page.
And the other thing is like the fact that we had to like deliberate of what their best lineup is at the end of a game shows that they're not like, I feel like most great teams, you know what their go-to starting five is, or their go-to death lineup is, like the Warriors team was, like, you know exactly what you're going to go for. Whereas with that Lakers team, like, you could probably have like, you could argue for like 10 different guys in that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're literally lineup. Like, you're trying to pick just like
Kent Bazemore to get minute. No.
No.
Big bad Dwight.
I can't stand Bazemore. He literally just he shows flashes where he's like, hang on, this guy really good. And then literally he'll go and just have like earn his minutes and then just play awfully. But I just want to quickly mention AD, just a general frustration with him. He's an absolute, don't get me wrong, he's an absolute beast, so skilled, like one of the more skilled, like in regards to like being a jump shooter, big man that we've ever seen. But I just can't stand how often he goes to ground. I cannot stand it. Literally, you're 6'10", like built, and you just like fall on the ground so much. And I've never seen someone get hurt so many times. It's absurd. What do you guys think of that?
Yeah, I don't like it at all. But he's the weirdest superstar ever. Because, like, he has, like, no personality. Like, I feel like every other superstar...
His personality is he's, like, his monobrow.
Yeah, like, I don't know anything about him. Do you know what I mean? Like Steph's, like, this cool, like, happy, vibrant guy. And then LeBron is just, like, this, you know, king. And there's, like... I feel like every other superstar in the league, you know, Giannis is like this humble guy from Greece who's like jacked out of his mind. Kawhi is like the weirdo. Like, they've all got their own personality. And then Davis just, like you don't know anything about him. Like he doesn't, I feel like you don't get much out of him in the media. He's just like the weirdest superstar.
Yeah, I just get frustrated. Like I swear, like I've watched him like 5 times this year, being like, oh, do I need to send it to the group that he's just done his ACL? B, that she just gets up and he's fine. He's just like, just limping. It's absolutely kicks my teeth in. But yeah, what do you think the Lakers, obviously health dependent, where do you see them finishing in the West?
Win one series, maybe?
One series. Jeez, even fully healthy? Yeah. And another quick, Benny, you answer that quickly there. I've just got another one for you.
That's so tough. Because like you're projecting, are they going to, you're pretty much projecting or predicting if you think they're going to get it right or not. I have no faith in the Jazz whatsoever. Like they will not win more than one playoff series. They just won't. you can pencil it in now. Like though. I think they win one playoff series. Yeah.
One playoff series. Yes. Okay. I reckon any team with LeBron healthy can still make the Western Conference Finals.
But is LeBron, he's still a freak, but he's not easily the best player in the league. He's probably the fourth best player in the league or the fifth best player when he's healthy right now.
You still take that. I just think his level of like IQ and his ability to turn it on.
Absolutely.
It's similar to Brady. You just don't want to like deny them. He's just turned it on so many times. But quickly as well, do you think Westbrook plays the full season of the Lakers this year?
Yes. They did too much. They gave up too much to get him there.
Mainly because they just can't get rid of that contract.
Yeah.
Well, that's true as well.
Jeez, I wonder, LeBron, surely he's going to be so sick of him by the end of the year.
Gave up too much to get him and, like, sort of a situation where, like, if you back out of it now, like, you're admitting fault.
And I actually don't understand why LeBron even thought that it would work. Like I'm not saying like they might find a way to make it work, but like he was the one that really like he said no to the Buddy Hield trade because he wanted Westbrook.
Can you imagine if they got Buddy Hield?
They probably would be favorites for the chip if they had Buddy Hield.
Yeah, it's so strange. It kind of like reminds me of just like kind of MJ with like being a GM, just like how for some reason he just can't be a good GM, and they like LeBron just got it wrong with this.
They're too smart for their own good, like they're
100%.
It could have been like a little bit of ego, sort of like I'm LeBron. Like if anyone's gonna sort Westbrook out, like I'll get him in line. And then that's another feather in his hat.
Here we are.
I'll feather.
Might have changed the podcast name. so that's enough for the Lakers. We kind of touched on it. Are you worried about Dame at all?
Let Yags do this one.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about Dame. Like he's.
I'm not worried.
He's had a bad start to the year, but I think if we did a podcast in 10 games time, he'll have dropped a 50-burger against someone and he'll be up.
Yeah, 100%. I reckon. Yeah, Clay started a year like a few years ago, just awfully, and then he ended up just hitting 14 threes against the Bulls. So it doesn't take long for a player just to turn it on.
His past 3 games has been a bit better. So
I think, you don't have to worry about Dame's like preparation or anything like that. So I think, I agree. And a little like final, we'll do this and then we'll do most improved, but who have like you most enjoyed watching this season? And it doesn't have to be like, it can be like, obviously you're always going to enjoy watching Steph Curry play basketball, but like someone that a bit more obscure, a bit more random, who would give name a couple or one or two.
I'm going to give a massive shout out to Grayson Allen. he was massive villain at Duke. I watched a pod the other day, like JJ Redick interviewing him, and they were just talking about like who was the more hated villain, and like whilst they were at Duke, and like he was just a meme going around on the internet and all that kind of stuff. And then he's come across to Milwaukee this year. He was at Memphis last year, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. And all of a sudden now he's third in the league in threes made. He's shooting almost 9 attempts a game.
Third?
Third in the league in threes made.
No!
Yeah.
Is that in total threes or percentage? Total threes.
Total threes, what? Yeah. And he's shooting almost 9 threes a game at 43%.
What? How does he play enough minutes to even shoot that many?
Yeah, mate, he's been unreal, and he really looks like he is the perfect fit alongside Giannis, and we haven't even seen like what it looks like with all these other pieces. Like he's played with like Holiday like only a couple of times. He's probably played one game with Middleton, maybe. Wow.
Do you know what's wrong with Middleton? Just quickly.
Wonderful question. but I think that and he's made shots in big moments, like game tying,
forcing overtime.
Yeah, game tying threes.
COVID.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. But I think that he's really found like his niche and his role, and I think it's a perfect fit as well, alongside Giannis there. And I'm pretty keen to see where he goes throughout the season once they start getting players back, because his start this season has been tremendous.
Yeah, a good player. Yikes.
Tyrese Maxey. And Seth Curry. So two of the Philly guards.
Here we are.
Have just been like, I think they're both like Tyrese's second year.
Yep.
Rookie last year. He's like just made like a quantum leap. Because obviously his defense is pretty good, but like he's shooting well and he's just playing. Like he's playing Ben Simmons' role, which he obviously wouldn't have thought going into the season that he would be doing. And now all of a sudden he's got playing, you know, 35 minutes a game on a team that's playing really good ball. And he's, you know, he's probably been their second best player behind Embiid.
Yeah. Which is
a massive credit to him. And then Seth, obviously, he's always going to be in the shadow of his brother, but he's just such a good player. Like he's just the perfect, like every team in the league would want him.
Yeah.
He fits any team. Like he's a great role player. He's a great teammate. Like he's just a perfect teammate. So it's just great to see him playing the best basketball of his career.
Yeah, I think it will always kill the Mavs that they got rid of Seth Curry.
That's exactly what I was gonna say.
Yeah, man, you gotta wake up pretty early to stay on class, mate, Benny.
Like that fit alongside Doncic, and they haven't really been able to replace that.
Yeah. I don't understand that. It's like it's such a blatantly like good combination. I don't get it.
Think about we're just talking about Grayson Allen. Like, I mean, he doesn't have like he's not quite the natural scorer that Seth is, but like that kind of person that's there for the kick out three, can do it at a high clip. When you want to go to more of a shooting style of lineup, like you inject them off the bench. I think every lineup needs one of them. And I think the fact that Dallas let him go and now that he's thriving further in Philly is, it's no surprises really.
Yeah. Two things on that. First of all, I would pay Seth Curry over Tim Hardaway Jr.
Yeah,
if I was the Mavs. And secondly, I reckon talking about when you just mentioned Grayson Allen again, it took Seth Curry a while. He bounced around the league a bit. We gave him a run in the G League of the Warriors, if you remember that, Benny.
Yeah.
Maybe 8 years ago or something like that. So it took him a while, and like Grayson Allen could turn into one of those sort of players that just needs a bit more time to develop.
Yeah. I just wanted to say as well, like I know it's done to death, but you've brought up Maxey and how well he's playing, second year player. That's just like another piece you could throw in with Simmons to get someone.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Maury would be loving that. I've got two players as well. First one is Miles Bridges. It's been awesome watching him say no to a contract extension because he wanted more, and then just to come out and ball. I think that's awesome. It's very exciting to watch. Got mad hops, but can also shoot some threes. He played very well against us today, Benny, which killed. But he's someone that I've really enjoyed watching. And although like the Hornets are naturally just fun to watch anyway, but he's definitely a big part of the reason why I turn on a Hornets game. And my second player is Gary Payton II. Benny, I was thinking about this today, that headline of Steph, Clay, and Draymond getting annoyed that we got rid of Bradley, Avery Bradley, and instead GP2 got that spot. That has just turned out, like, that's why you're always backing the Warriors GM and our scouts. But, yeah, he's been unbelievable. He's plays incredible defense, and there's just really not that many players that play that good defense at the guard position. There's really not. I was trying to think about it, and he
is like the only one that comes to mind, really, that is like,
yeah,
proper capable of that real shutdown, like,
yeah, 100%. Well, it's so mean, and part. Like, I think Gary Payton's hops are just off chops as well. I think it's been really awesome to see him earn minutes, because now it's put someone like Toscano Anderson like struggling to get minutes more so, and like it's just generally it's such a good asset for the Warriors as well, as Steph gets older, to just be able to put him on the opposing point guard, on those more athletic guards, just because you don't need Steph playing those minutes and trying to keep up with a prime Westbrook or a prime D Rose, the equivalent.
Both really good ones. Miles Bridges is like, he's just figured something out this year, and how to use his body. He's shooting more threes. He's down a little bit on percentage, but I think that's just
shooting more
purely because he's shooting more.
Yeah, he reminds me a bit of Julius Randle a bit, randomly.
And he's bringing others into it as well. Like, he's having easily his best year in terms of assists as well. So I think that's a really good one. And then, yeah, like GP's been unreal. He's got like one of the best dunk packages this season as well, to go with his defense, and the fact that he's like 5 foot something is like ridiculous.
GP two, no, he's 6'2", 6'3".
Yeah, I know, but like,
but he's short. If you say 5'10". Yeah, he's short.
It's also just a bit short because he, like, Gary Payton could have been like one of those, you know, because he's the son of like a legend, and it sort of seemed like his career was kind of fizzling out into nothing, and now he's found his purpose at the Warriors. It's so mean to say, because, you know, like, you never want to see like that sort of son of a legend become a complete failure.
Now he
could be a important role player on a potential championship team. So
get there. Definitely. And just quickly, I want to also mention Josh Giddey has been awesome. Obviously, he's having the classic rookie year where he's showing enough to know that he'll be a player in the league for years to come. But obviously, he's having those natural those troughs, as Yag says.
Someone said that he's like the best passer already in the league. I can't remember who's
that's cap.
That's cap. Carry on.
That's absolute cap.
Yeah, it was carry on. But like, it just.
But yeah, yeah,
I think he was another player. So like, it was really a bit of respect for him.
Jeez, yeah. But yeah, OKC been exciting. Already winning more games than I like thought they were going to. Yeah. But yeah, I think Josh Giddey's showing a lot, and I think it's exciting that we've kind of got a quick replacement for Ben Simmons.
I think very quick. Yeah, I think the other thing with Giddey is just like, I thought that Shea might somewhat slow his, not his development, but like his introduction into the NBA. I thought it might be a little bit slower, given that it somewhat comes across that like Shea and him are similar players. Obviously, Shea's a little bit more natural in the scoring department, but they're both pass first, I feel. And but they in a weird way are working together. And I think what he's shown so far has been quite promising.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's a good balance between having two young stars that are somewhat close in age. So like Shea can actually like show him, like has more confidence in the league and can like pass that on to Giddey. So that's pretty important as well. We kind of, do you guys want to touch on most improved, or do you want to ban it?
Oh, well, I'll throw in Jar whilst you're there. It all depends on how each person views most improved. Like, I think for me, there's different, everybody like can improve at different spots in their career. But like, if you're talking about like Tyrese Maxey, for example, like, there's a certain amount of development that comes between like the first and second season, I feel.
Yeah.
And like, you somewhat expect a certain jump, and like some of that for him has come with extra minutes, but like, he's definitely taken a jump up. But like, I think Jar's gone from being like a highly rated top draft pick, and I think he's taken that jump this year into star, like absolute star. And, you know, aside from maybe Memphis's record, like, you could definitely make an argument that he'd be like MVP, borderline MVP discussion. So I think that kind of improvement puts him in the race for that award.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I'm sort of similar to Benny. It depends how you view it. Like, obviously Jar's like a sort of one day he'll probably be like a top five, top 10 player in the league. Whereas you could also have the most improved guy who sort of goes from being like a bench player, like a Miles Bridges, goes from being like a sort of average starter to a really good player. But yeah, like Bridges would be a good one to have up there early days.
Yeah.
A couple other candidates potentially. I think OG Anunoby for Toronto Raptors has been really good. We haven't really touched on the Raptors too much on this podcast, but you know, he's been trusted a bit more over there and slowly developing into his scoring ability, sort of that defensive side came a bit more naturally to him. So
I think Tyler Hero is another one that is worth a mention. It's kind of a weird one because he played out of his shoes in the finals and then kind of like went back down. But like, I think that's, he's been impressive and like showing consistency. So I think that's definitely going to go into the award as well.
Jordan Poole.
True. But yeah, was there anything else you guys wanted to mention?
I think that was a pretty good pod, Ari.
Definitely. But thanks very much for coming on, guys. It's outstanding. We'll do another one mid-season, I reckon, in like another 15, 20 games. But it's been, again, great to do another one of these NBA pods. And thank you to all the listeners. It's been a while since I've put a pod up, but mainly because I was in a bit of a, I was in a bit of a slump from the Doggies grand final loss. So I was a bit off sport, but I'm back in a big way. There's plenty of landings coming up soon. But thanks again, guys. And we'll talk again soon.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Landy.